This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Thank you, Pete. Look forward to that word on the cash flash from Earl in 1 hour. Another chance for you to win $1,000 just by listening today. Tomorrow all week here on Grant and Danny and on 106.7 The Fan. It is noon, which means it's time for our Beltway Blitz, and as always, we will get you started on the gridiron. Ben Standing covers the Redskins, NBC Sports Washington.com. Ben, why don't we start on the coaching ranks where Kirk Olivadotti is interviewing for the same job he's got in Washington and Green Bay. Not that common that multiple assistants might leave for lateral jobs. What do you think that says about the Redskins' situation?
Well, I mean, there's so many. It's almost like a where to begin response. I mean, on some level, there's obviously a lot of uncertainty, right? I mean, Jay Gruden, he's staying. But, you know, we all have to assume on some practical level that if they don't make the playoffs next year, there would be a head coaching change. So if you're an assistant, and you kind of don't know where things are at, plus that, you know, all this talk of the defensive coordinator situation, which impacts Olivadotti, you may be looking, hey, can I go somewhere else and get a contract that extends beyond this season or what have you, have a little more certainty. That makes sense. And again, obviously there's just so much odd things happening right now with the Redskins that we all can't really even comprehend from the outside, and from people on the inside, they just may be like, oh man, I need to move on from this.
Ben, the offense has gotten worse each of the last 2 years, and it was catastrophically bad this year, even with Alex Smith. I've been asking everybody this, and I want your take on it as well. Why isn't there more noise or buzz about offensive staff changes? Obviously, they need a talent influx, but good heavens, they were awful all season long, unacceptably bad. The top four offenses are in the conference final. Each of the last several years, it's basically three of the top four offenses are in the conference finals. The Redskins are further away than they've been in some time. Why is there not more screaming and outrage about the offensive side of the ball?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I guess, like, to go back to Kirk Cousins last season, obviously, you know, the insane amount of injuries, particularly on the offensive line, I think we all, to some degree, accept that played a role. And the offense actually seemed to do fairly well considering the amount of injuries. Then you get to this year, Alex Smith, it just never got going with him at quarterback. The receiver situation was not great. So I think it's sort of my sense is just that with the Alex Smith part of it, the blame, so to speak, goes more with him than, say, the coaching staff. But, yeah, because I think Gruden does a pretty good job. But, look, there's absolutely questions that need to be asked from top to bottom about what needs to be fixed. And, you know, one thing that's so frustrating looking ahead to this season is, without having a clue what they're going to do at quarterback, it's almost impossible to project anything. We can sit here and contemplate all the moves they should make, but if we don't know who their quarterback is, or it doesn't seem like they can go get a real one if Alex Smith can't play, good luck, you know, seeing how this team really advances, you know, in any real way next year.
As far as Alex Smith goes, what's most realistic? Should we assume maybe he could get back by the end of next season, or just kind of think about him as an option for 2020. How are you moving forward in your writing and analysis about this team?
At this point, I was assuming he's out for this season, or at least to the point, whatever their plans are, they can't assume he'll be back. Again, that's just based on the information that's been out there and things we all hear. I don't think you can, you know, count on him for September. I mean, sort of connected to that, I made on NBC Sports Washington, we did a superlative things at the end of the season, and one of the questions posed was, what player would you trade away? I said Colt McCoy, not because he wouldn't be a good backup, but I fear Jay Gruden would view him as a starter. And if you go into the season with Colt McCoy as a starter, if that's the plan, then I just don't think this you've limited your ceiling already, and that's why it's so complicated to figure out what on earth they're going to do with this Alex Smith uncertainty.
Benjamin, to that end, are you in the they should draft a quarterback this offseason camp, or are you in a don't do that under any circumstances?
I wouldn't do it at 15 based on what we know, but I probably would consider doing it in round two. I mean, I don't personally think a round two quarterback seems like it's an ultimate, and any quarterback's almost outside the top 15 picks in the draft almost often seems like a dart throw. But, you know, like I said, if the plan is they don't have a ton of cap space. We know they have to go out and get a left guard, safeties, possibly, or they have to re-sign some of their own guys. So they're not going to have the kind of money most likely to get an interesting veteran quarterback. So if you're going to be sort of saddled with Colt McCoy and something else, then at least maybe go with that second round pick as the something else to have some hope for some potential. And maybe that guy gets in line up at some point next year.
Ben, thank you, buddy. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Let's talk hockey. Unfortunately, after last night, the Capitals lost 7-2. They've lost three in a row. In fact, they are 3-4-2 in their last nine games. Rob Carlin is only a small reason why. He joins us now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Rob, last night was a disaster, dude. 7-2. Al Koken and I post-game kind of both said this and agreed with each other, and I feel weird about it. But we said that we were less annoyed last night than a night before when they lost to the Blues. I don't know how we should feel about that.
I mean, are you feeling that way because Nashville's a legit team and the Blues are a bad team and they lost? Is that why?
Yeah, basically. And it was the back-to-back and they were waiting for you and it was a scheduled loss.
Right.
I mean, 7-2 stinks, but that was brutal.
Yeah, it was brutal. I mean, one team was ready to play and the other one wasn't. And, yeah, the scheduled loss and all that and the whole situation, late developing, all of a sudden you lose him. I mean, they're in a bad spot right now. Look, there's a lot of people on Twitter last night ranging from, you know, I'm not watching until they turn things around. I actually saw a fire Reardon. I mean, it is crazy. And then the other people saying Trotz never let it get like this. I mean, we do have a short memory. We, you know, last November they were in fifth place and they made that Nashville-Colorado trip and we were all on fire Trotz watch. And then right before the trade deadline, the blowout in Chicago where it was another seven-goal game that, you know, they looked like a team that was absolutely lost. And then came the trade for Kempney. They're in a bad spot right now, no doubt about it. They're not playing a good game. Look, Evgeny Kuznetsov, he needs to wake up. He needs to become a dominant player on the ice again. And you know, right now they're just they're scuffling and trying to get back to playing their game. I believe they will. I think this team has too much talent, but they're in a bad spot right now, no doubt.
Uncle Rob, you mentioned trades. Trade deadline is approaching. It's sneaking up on us. What might the Caps do? I think they need an injection of life somehow.
Well, we all had a sit down with McClellan last week, all the, you know, beat reporters, and you know, it doesn't sound like they're going to look to make a big move, nor do I think they necessarily need to. They've done that in the past with Kevin Shattenkirk, and forget the results on the ice, it wasn't a good mix in the room either, and they've got a good room. They've got guys that enjoy playing together, that don't have cliques in the room. They're a group that's in this together. So I don't think they need to do anything major. He made it sound like if there's a salary for salary type move, they would be interested in pursuing it. I keep seeing Wayne Simmons' name from Philadelphia. I don't think they make a move like that, and risk breaking up some sort of chemistry. I think what they're going to do is let this group figure it out. And that's probably the right move because this is a Stanley Cup, you know, champion team. So I think, you know, it was 2 weeks ago, two and a half weeks ago, where this team was on an absolute roll and had won 16 to 20 games. So let's not overreact to this dip right now.
Rob, Barry Trotz comes back to D.C. Friday night. It's going to be emotional. I'm excited to see him coach in the Isles, who, by the way, he's done an amazing job with. They're just 3 points
amazing
behind the Capitals in the Metro. What a coach he is. What kind of night are you expecting, and what kind of ovations are you going to get, Caps fans?
If he doesn't get an absolute standing ovation for a long time, then something's wrong. And I anticipate it's going to be hair standing up on your arms kind of reception. They're going to play a video tribute to him, which is going to be nothing short of spectacular. And it's not just him. It's Lane Lambert and it's Mitch Korn, too. And Robin Lehner, the Islanders goalie, was, you know, a disaster through his career. He's now leading the league in goals against. That's Mitch Korn.
He's unbelievable.
He's unbelievable. He's the goalie whisperer. So I don't think that Mitch Korn's going to be coming to D.C. on Friday, but the other two certainly are, and they deserve everything coming their way. People that can't understand how or why the Caps let Trotz get away, that was a plan that was in motion, and Barry Trotz had an opportunity to, as Alan said last night on our podcast, go to greener pastures, and that green is the type you put in a bank account. He had an opportunity to go chase some money, and no one saw this coming with the Islanders. Good for him. Good for the Caps. It worked out really for everyone. But it is going to be an unbelievable video tribute that the Caps do for the coach, the greatest coach they've ever had, that took them in a place they've never been before. And it's now, all of a sudden, a really important game. The Islanders play Thursday. If the Islanders win Thursday, they could come in here tied in points with the Caps. I mean, we were talking about all these games being ultra important and having the significance of having Trotz back. I can't wait to be in the building on Friday night.
Uncle Rob, you're the best. Congrats on getting to the midpoint of Season 3 on Game of Thrones. I will say the word Dracarys to you, knowing that you now know how important that word is and what it means. Thank you, buddy.
I am locked in, and this is what I'm doing for the rest of my day. Thanks for having me on, guys.
My guy. Enjoy that day. There's Uncle Rob Carlin on Grant and Danny, your Beltway Blitz. Conference championship games to be played on Sunday. There are two to choose from. Which one is better, we will discuss on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Andre 3000, good choice. Well done. Sean touching the buttons, all the right buttons today. Hopefully Tommy's feeling better.
Yeah.
Been under the weather the last couple of days.
Poor guy.
What's going on with Tommy?
We got a lot of that going on, man. Yeah, and it's usually the kids bring it home, and everybody gets whatever the hell it is. It's now going around my kid's school, so I'm sure I'm next in line. But, man, oh, man.
Chris Thompson tweeted out, said, funny story. When AP was on his visit here, I introduced myself to him and assumed he knew who I was based off how well I had played the previous season. As we were talking, he said, "You play cornerback?" Question mark. My heart dropped. That's hilarious.
So good.
Yeah, that's really, really funny. Never forget, though. And I don't mean to single out Adrian Peterson, but this is a good time to bring this back up. Fans love talking as if players really know other players and know other teams. And, you know, fans should vote. Fans say all the time, like, players should vote for the Pro Bowl. No, they shouldn't. Players know which players are really good and which players aren't. No, they don't. They're concerned with their team generally. They're busy playing games when other teams are playing games. Adrian Peterson, who's a smart guy, who's plugged in, who watches a lot of football, didn't know who Chris Thompson was.
Now, he probably could have told you what linebacker he opposed was the best, or the guy that, the defensive lineman that gave him the most fits. Like, he could probably tell you that Fletcher Cox is a superstar, right? But when is he watching game film of Chris Thompson? When does that come up in his daily schedule? He's got to prepare to play against defenses. So maybe he knows a couple guys that he's got to go up against or who hit him hard. But the idea that he didn't know who Chris Thompson was speaks to exactly what you're talking about.
You said you had a similar interaction with Boomer Esiason, and I'm curious about that.
Well, so years ago, for whatever reason, you know what it was? It was when I went up to do my last Comic Standing audition, which went well. I've been on the show. No, I haven't. It went terribly. But the point is, I went up there to do it, and CK was kind enough to let me do the show from up there. And after Boomer and Carton, no longer a thing, were done, I went up to Boomer Esiason, who'd been on our show no fewer than 12 times.
Where did you see them? Did you go into their studio?
No, so he's in the hallway right outside of the studio they had me set up in. And, we had talked to Boomer, not weekly, but almost weekly at various points. We had him on Fridays. I mean, we probably had him on, honestly, 20 times, but conservatively 12 times, maybe somewhere in the range of 15 to 20, whatever it was.
Was this during Grant and Danny or Holden and Danny?
Grant and Danny. Okay. Grant and Danny. We've been doing the show for a while. He'd come on a bunch, said he enjoyed coming on. And again, I'm not sure how much he actually enjoyed it, but he was very nice.
He's always very nice. Made you think he likes us a little bit, yeah. Which he probably makes every Tom, Dick, or Harry around the country feel that way.
Because he's excellent at his job. He's awesome. So I just went up to him and said, "Hey, Boomer, my name's Danny. You've been on my show several times in D.C., Grant and Danny. Always appreciate that. Just, you know, my dad went to Maryland. Just wanted to say hey and thank you for coming on all those times." He didn't listen to a single word I said. Okay, and then started to ask me, like, "Yeah, have you met our producer, Johnny Galecki?" Or not Galecki, what did I say, Galecki? You met, like, Johnny, this guy, and Mikey Dudats, and you know where the files are? And I'm like, huh? And it became clear after a couple seconds that he thought I was their new intern. Like, from
so he missed the part where you said who you were.
Yeah, like, or purposely missed it. He didn't listen
well,
to
we also
it.
Have sat down with him on Radio Row multiple times,
yeah.
too.
Oh, I know.
But he should not remember you from that.
Of course not.
Because those are just cattle calls where he's doing 50 interviews with
every
two guys
minutes,
that look
yeah.
like us every 5 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, so this is the 5'11 slob from the whatever market? Yeah,
exactly.
I've seen that guy before. So it was one of those, like, we have some rapport, right? You've been on our show several times. We're not the number one market, but we're top six now.
I got to think of my version of that story. I'm sure everyone's got one where you just felt small.
Reminder. You've accomplished nothing. Reminder, you are not important. Reminder, there are way bigger fish.
I've probably got 100 of those that I could come up with as well. I got to dig one up. That's
you know funny. What I want you to tell at a certain point? I know it's not on topic. Just because I think of all these Bruce things. I told this one last night to a buddy. The time that you cornered Bruce at the Super Bowl.
We've told that so many times.
You told it so many times, but it's so good.
It is good.
He gets stuck in this pen. He doesn't realize he's roped in. Oh, it's so good.
I'll definitely. Maybe Friday. We could do a very dramatic reveal, like a big telling. We could do like a whole segment and give a lot of detail on it.
We should be just telling Bruce stories. He's still on his job and hasn't spoken to the media in 1,000 days, answering questions
there
about what the hell's going on.
There are two Bruce Super Bowl stories, remember?
Yes.
But the second one's better.
What about when he showed up and just sat down and said, "Here we go"?
That was crazy also. There was also the time, We'll tell it Friday.
Just tell it now.
It's not worth it now, but there was the time that we met his wife.
Yep.
And we didn't know it was his wife.
No, we didn't.
This is the significantly better story.
This is the one, man.
And she told us that she liked the show.
Oh, my God.
Now, I don't think she actually likes the show or knows about the show, but she seemed to know about it a little bit. She referenced like things from the show that made me think either she's just really smart and sharp and making me feel special, or she actually listens to the show.
She's aware of the program.
One of the staples of the show, one of the hallmark pillars of this show, is to destroy how bad your husband is at his job. And I just thought it was incredible that she said, "Oh, yeah, I've listened to you guys on the fan. I liked your show.
Dare I say she was a fan of the show?
Well, she made us think that. I have a hard time believing that. I could tell you right now, my wife hates people who say negative things about me. She has gotten mostly off of Twitter because she would try to interact with people occasionally or whatever, and I said, "Listen, a couple things. Number one, we can't do this.
We can't have that." Yeah.
"Number two, you make me look worse. Even if we could do this, when my brothers or my wife," and I try to tell my brothers this, "when they're involved in some argument and they got Paulson as their last name, you make me look like an idiot." Mm-hmm. "I don't care what that guy's saying. He's a jerk to me. He's a mean person. Right. He hates me. So what? I don't know him. I've never met him. He pretends to be me in videos. I don't care about this person. My brothers lose sleep over it." You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
My wife is now mostly off Twitter for that. And I bring this up because I would think Bruce Allen's wife would despise us. Now, maybe in 50 years or whatever, 35 years of marriage from now, she won't care that much when people say bad things about us. Meaning Allison, my wife.
Yeah.
Maybe she'll be like, "Yeah, he is kind of a jerk." "Yeah, I've lived with him for a long time, and everything you're saying is correct.
I've had enough of him."
And maybe that's the deal. But it was very weird. She was very nice and complimentary. And we also didn't know that it was his wife. To this day, I think we're not 100% sure, but we had enough. We're almost positive, right?
Dude, it totally was. It totally was.
We did some research after the fact.
Yeah, we did some detective work. We did some True Detective. We were Mahershala and Stephen Dorff. We did it.
What a day. But I'll tell the full story of Bruce Allen getting cornered like some type of small rodent on a back deck.
He had to go somewhere. He had nowhere to go.
He had nowhere to go.
He trapped himself for no reason.
He got trapped in a little pen.
He tried to walk away.
He got lost in a maze that wasn't a maze.
Our broadcast area, and he literally just kept walking deeper and deeper into a 90-degree corner.
He thought about hopping the fence.
And he like stood there.
He tried so hard to do it and couldn't.
He goes, you could tell him looking at it. He's like, should I jump over this fence so I don't have to walk back past them with my tail between my legs?
He would have had to go into the fan zone with the regular peons, and that wasn't an option either.
That definitely wasn't.
He saw like an option where they were wheeling in and out dumpsters. You know what I mean? Like out the back door.
But that was the time he came back over. And he came back over and he sat down. He's like, let's go.
Are you guys ready?
We're like in the middle of a segment. There's 4 minutes left in the show. And we were like, yeah.
Yep. Let's go.
Let's go.
We also need Danny to tell the story with Frank Caliendo at some point.
Oh, that one stung. Oh, that one hurt, man.
Here's my only regret from that Bruce interview. I think we did a good interview.
Yeah.
I think we challenged him. Here's one thing I take a lot of pride in. There are things we're not great at. And I'll speak for myself. There are things that I need to get better at and I work on. I feel like when we get someone on for an interview in a big spot, we do a good job. Whether that's DJ Swearinger, McLuhan after he's blown out. But we got a good chance to get a lot of newsmakers on over the years after they're involved. And I think we do good interviews. The only thing I regret, and we didn't have enough time and it wasn't the right place, but I promise you, if Bruce Allen comes on again, and I hope that he does, because it'll be a fair interview. We're not going to kill him. This is not some shock jock nonsense. We'll do a very fair, reasonable interview where he will be challenged and it'll be good for mostly us, but I guess for him too if he handles himself well. Here is what I would definitely do the next time. I'm going to ask him how he's winning off the field. And I want to get him to get, and I'll explain how the segment works to him.
Oh, man.
In case he hasn't heard it. Newsflash, I know he's heard it and he doesn't like it. But I'll explain how the segment works and I'll ask him, how are you winning off the field today?
Can you imagine then Thommy Flick fires the sounder?
I need this more than I need air to breathe.
Now,
please
again,
do this.
That interview wasn't long enough, and it sounds like, oh, I would have done it. It just wasn't the right place, right? The Super Bowl.
Yeah, and there's no way to fire that thing because I think we were recording it. I mean, the whole thing was weird.
If he ever agrees to come on the radio with us, we will figure out how Bruce is winning off the field, and I will tell him, we do this because Bruce Allen once said these words, and we'll play the
clip. And you're Bruce Allen, sir.
Yeah, and you're Bruce, and this would be a huge honor for us as a show if you would – The best thing ever is if, you know what would make him just a human for 3 minutes? If he just went, well, I woke up today and I realized I'm still the president of the Redskins. Therefore, I am.
No, that's on field, Bruce. How about I found some change in my pockets and got an RC Cola? There you go.
Now you're doing
there
it.
You go.
What if Danny asked him if there are still phones in Hawaii?
Ooh.
That'd be a good question.
That's a quote.
That would be a good question.
That's a good one.
Two games. Only one is the best of the two. Which is it? You get to watch a game. Which one will it be? 800-636-1067. We'll pit the AFC-NFC titles against each other. Next, Grant and Danny. 1067 The Fan.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Over the weekend, we got a list of chores to accomplish. We got people to see and places to be, and we're moving and shaking. If you can only carve out a couple of hour window to watch the majority of one of these two games, and like many of the people in the country, you've got to prioritize where you want that window to come. Early game, Rams at the Saints, NFC Championship, 13-3 at 13-3, or late game, AFC title, the old dog, Tom Brady, the new pup, Pat Mahomes, the 11-5 Patriots, the 12-4 Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. Which one would you prioritize? That's the question at 800-636-1067.
With all due respect to the oldest of the old guards versus the new guard, that's a great game. It's a three-point game toss-up with all the elements to things that I usually love. I love, as long as the Redskins aren't involved, and I usually never have to worry about it, but playoff games and the elements. Those are the memorable ones. The snow drifts, the tuck rule game, the, you know, it was so cold that, you know, one guy was wearing a T-shirt and the other coach was all bundled up and, he couldn't hold his play sheet because it was so freezing. Or other kinds of rain or different elemental things. Those are the great memorable playoff games where John Facenda can do a NFL Films type thing, right, from back in the day. With all due respect to that game, I want that Rams-Saints. That's the one I want. I want all the points. I want all the first downs. I want all the great offenses. I want two head coaches that I love, two quarterbacks that, again, there's your old guard and Drew Brees who doesn't get enough credit, and young Jared Goff who's, right at this point, a robot under the direct remote control of Sean McVay. I like that they built their teams in two completely different ways, one with an expensive quarterback and then some smart, savvy moves in New Orleans, the other with the cheap quarterback and all in on some great free agents to try to build a star-filled cast. They played a great game earlier on this season that was one of the best games of the year until the Rams-Chiefs game stole that. I want this game. I love it. I'm excited about it. I'll be happy if either team wins, but I just want the spectacle. This, to me, is as good as the sport has to offer.
Yeah, I think I'm picking between six on one hand and a half dozen in the other. I don't know that there's a right or a wrong here. I'll go Patriots and Chiefs because I think there is a little bit more of a juxtaposition between the two teams here. And they're similar in design, right? They both want to basically take advantage of matchups in the passing game with weaponry. In the case of Kansas City, it's a lot of short, safe passes. It's Tyreek Hill at the line of scrimmage. It's Travis Kelce in the seam. They're running crossers and getting wide receivers on linebackers, and Andy Reid's a genius. They have a very ball-controlled offense that can score a lot of points with chunk yards because of speed, but they're throw first, run second. They set up the run with the pass, just like the Patriots do. So this is kind of the trend. This is what I like in the NFL. I think there's going to be a little bit more defense in this game. And while I know for a lot of people that's not a selling point for me, I think that'll be really fun. I'd love to see a 17-14, 20-17 championship game where the game's definitely decided by three. I think there's a better chance that the NFC game's a blowout. Now, I think it's going to be good, and I happen to think the Rams can beat the Saints. But if you told me right now one of these games is going to be 30-13, I would say it's the Saints over the Rams, with the Rams going to their place. I just think it's so hard to play there.
It's hard.
And Jared Goff is the one guy of the four that I trust the least. Also, you know what the Chiefs-Patriots game has that the Rams-Saints game doesn't have?
What's that?
Pat Mahomes. I'm in love with Pat Mahomes. I think that this guy is special and he's unique. This is early career Brett Favre. This is the beginning of something that I think could go for 10 or 12 or 13 years.
Yeah, it's like seeing, you guys remember the first time we saw Aaron Rodgers and went, hey, this guy's got a chance to, oh my God.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, we've seen, with coaches like Sean McVay, as an example, in your game, everyone's now looking for him.
Yep.
We got to find our version of Sean McVay. We got to find the next iteration of him. We're going to be doing the same thing at quarterback. I don't know how many of them are out there, but with the trend of the league, where you've got, if you're just looking at like Big 12 football, so to speak, Mahomes playing in an AFC title game, and you look at the offenses where Cliff Kingsbury was just named a head coach, and Kyler Murray is going to go in the first round at 5'9.5". This is the trend of the league. 15 years ago, maybe Mahomes doesn't get a chance to start. He certainly wouldn't have been drafted in the first few rounds. Now he goes somewhere around the top 10, and he ends up being on the field within a year. I love this game.
Yeah.
And it's also really, really a big game for the Belichick-Brady era in a lot of ways as well. I mean, if you get knocked off by a Chiefs team that isn't going anywhere in the next couple of years, next year if you're playing them in the playoffs, it's not like you go in favored to do it again. There could be a new bully on the block, so to speak. We'll take calls on this next at 800-636-1067. That's 800-636-1067. Which game's going to be better? Which game are you more excited to watch? Rams-Saints in New Orleans, Patriots-Chiefs on a frigid afternoon in Kansas City at Arrowhead Stadium. Two of the loudest environments in all of football. We're Grant and Danny. Grant and Danny on the Fan getting ready for AFC and NFC Championship football on Sunday. First of the two games, NFC matchup with the Rams and the Saints. Goff against Breeze, 13-3, opposing 13-3. Probably going to be a little bit more offensively laden. Patriots and Chiefs. I will say this about Kansas City's weather report. Remember, everyone over-talked about how cold it was going to be for a couple days. Now the weather reports, because these things are fluid and change, are back to what they originally were.
So there's no Arctic Blast Gatorade?
I guess not. There was an Arctic Blast, but now there isn't. So they're saying instead of being sub-zero, it could be back into the low teens or something like that. It's still going to be damn cold. Well, I don't know what the difference is between 9 degrees and 0 degrees.
Right.
Maybe you can feel that difference, like you can taste Pepsi versus Coke. I don't really know.
There are, we always talk about this, there are 10-degree increments where once you're past the cold threshold, it's just so cold. The difference between 90 and 100 in D.C., when you're outside, it's miserable. That doesn't really matter. There are certain 10-degree windows, though, where it's a huge deal. Between 0 and 10 is not one of them, right? If it's 0, it's freezing. If it's 10, guess what? Still so cold with the wind. And stadium cold is always extra.
In terms of players that are most fun to watch or storylines in that first game, so I want to see if C.J. Anderson gets another big workload. My guess is he's not going to touch the ball nearly as much as he did against Dallas. I thought they needed him against the Cowboys for two reasons. Todd Gurley hadn't played in the previous two games and in 3 weeks and may have been a little bit rusty, and they were trying to figure out if that knee was 100%.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I thought that was a good matchup for him. That's a big physical front. If you're going to slam it between the tackles, you better do it with some girth, and that guy's a biscuit away from 260, so they kind of let him, with his long sleeves looking like a fullback, just kind of plow his way straight ahead, rather than trying to attack with speed against a really fast linebacking
corps. He looked like a linebacker in disguise, honestly. Like he, yeah. I think he changed his identity or something.
My guess is he probably gets somewhere between 9 to 12 carries this week rather than the 20-plus for a $120 that he had against Dallas. I want to see more Todd Gurley. I think the further removed from that injury he is, the better off from a health standpoint he should be. The key to the whole thing, though, is Jared Goff. We talked about him after their win over Dallas. And I hated using the phrase that he didn't drive the ball because I sound like I want to be Mike Mayock. But he does not have the zip and the normal release and oomph on the football that he normally has. And I don't know if there's something ailing him or what. He just wasn't playing with, it's not even confidence, but now you watch a quarterback who's fitting balls into small windows and making throws into tiny areas. And you go, that guy is feeling himself. Jared Goff did not have that against the Cowboys.
Just listen to these totals, anecdotally, okay? These are passing yards down the stretch after the bye week. 195, 162, 192, 222, 186.
You think they missed Cooper Kupp?
That tells you something is off with the operation. You can explain each one away. One of them, they didn't move the ball at all against Chicago and got it shoved on them. The other, they did whatever they wanted against San Francisco, still put up 48 points, and it didn't matter because both teams had the outcome was decided. Arizona couldn't stop them from rushing the ball. They ran for 270. So each one can be explained away. But big picture, something isn't as it was the first half of the year where it was 391, 456, 350, 342, 379, and so on and so on. When
he's crashed back down earth, yeah. And that passing game is nothing like what it was, 100%. Agree with you. Here's the question, though. The Saints give up some big plays. They allow for some holes in that secondary that create some chunk yards. Can Goff and the Rams, if they need to, have a 330-yard, three-touchdown day that leads to 34 points?
Now, the Saints finished second of the year in run defense, but I think that's deceptive because I think they had leads all the time and teams didn't run as often. Right, I think they give up more pass yards, again, because teams are throwing against them. I think you would probably find something similar with the Rams, find something similar with Kansas City, et cetera. In terms of rushing yards per attempt, the Saints were kind of middle of the pack. They were okay, if memory serves, in that capacity. So I don't necessarily, in terms of passing yards per attempt, rather, they were middle of the pack. But I guess the point I'm making here is, this sets up as a battle of two elite offenses, because it does. They all took turns being first or second or third, Kansas City, New Orleans, and the Rams. I always think when games like this happen, it's about the worst unit of the two teams deciding the outcome. I always feel like this, and we'd have these conversations come Capitals postseason with Craig Lachlan and so many other guys. He'd always say it's the stars have to do it. And I always think stars cancel each other out. Right?
Yeah.
My star is close to your star. They're both making $30 million, whatever happens. To me, it's the role players. Who can be Robert Horry, or who's somebody that's forgettable? Who can step up and do something? I think the worst unit of each of these teams is their defense. Whichever one makes a player to turnover, a sack, a game-changing play, that's who wins.
So I looked up the Saints' numbers for you. They were second in rushing yards per play. Second best in the league.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very good against the run. They were 28th in passing yards per play and 29th overall in passing defense.
There you go. Maybe I'm wrong.
No. I think you're right. I think your point is that in terms of running the football on this team, they were good this year. Passing the football, to your point, those numbers largely come when they're giving you chunks at the end of games. You're playing. Maybe it's not prevent, but oh, you want to take 8 or 9? We're up 14. Go ahead. Be our guest. You know what happens when you get 8 or 9 yards underneath 7, 8 times on a drive at the end of a game? Your YPP goes up, where they rank 28 out of 32. But I do think there are plays to be had against this team. Now, you saw Alex Smith to Maurice Harris for 40 yards in New Orleans on a day where the Redskins did nothing well. The big 20-plus yard catch down along the goal line for Paul Richardson. There are holes to be had in this zone. You can beat them. I just don't know if Goff, playing like he has recently, is up to the task. Maybe he's got it in him and he just hasn't had to. I mean, the fact is they're 13-3.
Yeah.
So he's been probably content. Like one of those games you named with the passing yards, I remember watching it. They were playing the Detroit Lions in Detroit, and the Rams for 3 quarters kind of played around with the Lions and then pulled away and won by like 13 points or something like that. Goff did nothing that day, but he really didn't have to be honest with you. They were very content just kind of handing the ball off, taking what was given. They knew they were going to get out of there with a win. That's happened a few times. So when you need to, can you touch the button? Can you channel excellence as a passer? That's what I don't know. On the other side of things with the Chiefs, Damian Williams is becoming a fun little story. Nobody's really talking about the Kansas City running back because C.J. Anderson's a better story, having been cut twice this year.
That's true.
But Kareem Hunt gets run out of Kansas City correctly after what happened with him, and the video came out of his domestic dispute. And all of a sudden, their running game looked like it was going to fall apart. And you and I said, they don't look the same over a couple weeks. Well, as you fast forward a few weeks deeper and now into the playoffs, Damian Williams has come on. Bill Belichick singing his praises today. Meanwhile, the Patriots have Rob Gronkowski and Julian Edelman in the passing game. And Sony Michel of the New England Patriots, who they drafted in the second round out of Georgia, looks like a star right now. I mean, he is as hot as any running back they've had in the playoffs over the years at this point. And he emerged from midseason obscurity to get here. So there is some fun running back storyline in this weekend coming up, I think, in terms of just guys where you go, where the heck did C.J. Anderson, Damian Williams, Sony Michel, where were these guys all year?
Yeah, it's a kind of a referendum. It's dependent on where you buy in terms of the great running back debate that will, you know, probably never end as long as NFL teams are building. You've got multiple first-round running backs, or top pick type running backs. And Sony Michel, you mentioned. Todd Gurley, a mid-first-rounder. Mark Ingram, a first-rounder.
Well, I mean, this is why the debate won't end. Because of the four teams left, we could name those guys, but then we could point out Alvin Kamara is elite.
Precisely.
You should give him all the money and keep him around forever. Ingram, Heisman Trophy-winning first-rounder. And you mentioned Gurley, top-10 pick at the position. Never use a top-10 pick on a running back. Except that Gurley could have won a couple MVP awards at this point and is why the Rams are who they are.
And then the other side is, how could you waste money or huge resources on a running back? Damian Williams is excelling. James White is a weapon out of the backfield. They found Rex Burkhead off the scrap heap to score touchdowns in championship games. It's fascinating. And again, it will never end. I think the big takeaway is you should try to get as many good players as you can on your roster. That's just a decent way to build a team. But it is neat that you've got such contrasting ways of finding some of these guys that are going to have the ball in their hands 20 times a game.
800-636-1067. You want to hop in with us on Grant and Danny. Albert Breer of the MMQB and Sports Illustrated will join the show next. There is a Bruce Allen question that needs to be asked today, believe it or not. We will tackle that in the 1 o'clock hour right here on The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.